Hello there. You are listening to Passion Over Perfection Radio, and I am so happy to have you here today with me. My name is Sydney Jackson Cloxton, and I'm the owner and founder of Citrine Unlimited. As a coach doing leadership development for women, I had noticed some common things that keep popping up as I'm having conversations with my clients and speaking in public with other women. And so I decided to create Passion Over Perfection Radio as a tool to help inspire women, foster leadership growth through shared experiences, and create genuine connections. I really wanted all of us to know that we are not alone in some of our feelings, even though those feelings can sometimes feel very isolating. So with that being said, thank you for listening today, and I can't wait for you to enjoy this episode.
I am a hairstylist and salon suite owner based in Denver, Colorado. I also was a cosmetology educator for about 2 years at the Aveda Institute. So when I thought of your question for this one, I instantly went back to sitting in a coffee shop with someone I consider a mentor. There is a gentleman that's based in Denver. His name is Brad Van Dyke, and he is an incredible makeup artist based out of Denver. And he happened to be one of my leaders at the Aveda Institute. And part of the reason I even pursued that job was actually to get connected with him and network with him. So when I started at the Aveda Institute, I was teaching a course in editorial photo shoots. And that was something that I was trying to pursue outside of being in the salon. So I asked him towards the end of my career there if I could just sit down with him and have coffee and just chat. So what I did was I got photo shoot photos from anything I'd done recently, and I brought them to coffee, and I just said, how can you help me figure out what I could be doing better, and how can you help me get connected within the industry with editorial photo shoots? So he sat down with me and basically just picked apart each of my photos. And it sounds a lot more harsh, I feel like, than it actually was, but it was so, so helpful just seeing somebody much more experienced than me picking out, you know, maybe I didn't blend this eyeshadow color out here enough, or maybe I didn't line the lips perfectly in this photo or that photo. Just having somebody there to really dissect a photo that I've done was so, so helpful. So my advice with that is, if anybody's trying to better themselves, if you know somebody that you consider a mentor or consider really skilled in that career field, reach out to them and just ask them if they will critique your work and give you some good constructive criticism, because that was a huge game changer for me. So I would say, like, that is probably the, like, defining moment of what changed or shifted my career in general and led me to a lot of photo shoots from then. So that would be my answer kind of to that one.
Thank you so much, Jessica. And I really appreciate you just talking about and being candid with the fact that, you know, receiving constructive criticism is so important. I know even when I work with clients, right, it's hard for folks to hear something that's not pleasing to their ear. Nobody wants to be told, well, this could be better. And when you're in photography, right, or when you're in an artist, critiquing can be crucial to your growth. And I consider you as a hairstylist and artist, by the way. That's why I said that. I think it's an art form. So critiquing is so important, but that's with anything that deserves your attention, deserves you to push yourself, even if you're naturally good at it. Sometimes you just need to push yourself to be even better and to grow. So I appreciate you sharing that. Anyone in the audience want to share maybe an experience they've had with a mentor, or a coach and how it's supported them? Go ahead, Randy.
Okay. Hi, I'm Randy.
Hi, Randy.
So I am queen of mentor, like being a part of having someone mentor me. And I specifically will talk about someone who mentored me for years. And just for people who don't know me, I am a photographer here in the Denver, Colorado area. I haven't been here my entire life, but I started out in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and met my mentor in New Mexico. And one thing that I will say is that when you have a mentor or someone to look up to, it's what Jessica was talking about, is it gives you a chance to kind of see and hear from a different perspective. And having different perspectives really gives you a chance to grow, and it gives you a chance to speak about things maybe you haven't really encountered before. So my mentor, actually, he was in an industry of photography, and he was a mentor in big shows. So shows such as, like, you know, setting up Taylor Swift shows, and he was just in this giant industry. And for me, that was terrifying. It was terrifying to know that, you know, someone above me was going and doing these giant shows. And I remember one day he called me out to a casino, and he asked, you know, like, hey, can you come help me on this set? And I remember this was in the very beginning of my journey, and I absolutely almost peed my pants just because it was the biggest thing that had come my way. And I just remember sitting there and saying, okay, should I do it or should I not do it? So I kind of took that leap of faith with my mentor and a show that they were doing at a casino and helped them with that. And it ended up leading to a very big opportunity. You know, I didn't really see what was put forth with my mentor. I know that, you know, he kind of foresaw what was going to happen in my future and where my future was going to take me, just because he had kind of already been there and kind of lived that life in the industry already. So this, as far as the mentorship, having a mentor, he was my mentor for almost, gosh, I want to say 15 years. And this led from a tiny little show in New Mexico and then going to a giant, you know, going to San Francisco. And now I actually own my own studio here in Denver. So I just really think it's important, no matter, you know, whoever your mentor is, always take their advice, even if it's the advice like you have to mop the floors first. he always used to tell me, kind of like, you have to mop the floors before you can do anything else. And at the time, I always was like, wait a minute, so mop the floors, right? You have to start at the lowest to get to your higher part. And a lot of times during his mentorship, I actually did mop the floors, and I see why he always quoted that, because now here I am, I own my own studio. I have a studio in San Francisco. So whoever your mentor is, when you don't even believe or think that that person is going to be a mentor, there's someone out there ready and willing to help you learn. And sometimes they, as a mentor, may not even know that they're mentoring you. As far as mentorship, yeah, it's super important, because you never know where you're going to go as far as your career. And no matter who it is, you may be even mentoring that mentor. So just kind of some little tidbits that I've learned over the years.
About Randy, you mentioned some really key point to the whole idea of understanding the full scope of the business. A lot of times folks feel like, oh, well, you know, it's my business, so I don't need to do the quote unquote grunt work. And really, when you're a smart business owner, you might not know how to do everything, but you at least have some idea, because you never know when there's so many moving parts to a business. And I love the fact that you said your mentor just believed in you even when you didn't believe in yourself, and shared opportunities with you and had you do things that you probably were like, why am I even here doing this? I could be making money somewhere else right now. So appreciate you, Randy. Thank you. I really would love to know, and I'm so happy you selected this question, how has imposter syndrome impacted your leadership abilities?
Thank you so much, Sydney. And I just want to say it's an honor to be here. And I want to thank all of you who popped in for being here as well. I just also want to say that in regards to leadership, what Sydney was saying earlier about being a leader is that, you know, it's not just people who are, you know, quote unquote, professionally positioned. You are a leader, regardless if you realize it or not, especially in your community. You're a leader to your family, especially your kids. I believe that when you don't think that you're being watched, or when you don't think that you're being listened to, that you are. Somebody is watching you because of the light that you are carrying, the light that you are shining. And that, to me, is a part of being a leader. And I wasn't aware of that growing up. You know, I saw those who I looked up to, and, you know, I wanted to emulate them. And one of my, outside of my family, I believe one of my biggest quote unquote leaders or heroines, don't laugh, but it's Wonder Woman. I love me some Wonder Woman, you know, and, you know, getting to look at the episodes when I was growing up, it was very inspiring to me because she stood for just truth. And we're all about, you know, in my opinion, in this day and age of just really wanting to know the truth. And we first have to realize that, you know, we first must be able to recognize our truth so that we can share what is our truth if it is going to benefit and progress us, our family, our friends, humanity, and a better, just a better environment, a better way of being and being yourself. And so the way that it impacted me and my leadership, because first, you know, I didn't think of myself as a leader. I was always kind of like, you know, not the one that being, or I felt like I wasn't being seen or being heard. And that was coming from my family upbringing. You know, as kiddos, we were to be seen, not heard, and all of that jazz. I just came out of another meeting about an hour ago, which brought to the forefront also, because I do a lot of work with ancestor veneration and generational trauma. We can inherit imposter syndrome unknowingly, and that will manifest itself in, you know, not feeling like you're good enough, not feeling like you're smart enough, you know, not feeling like you are, you know, better, comparing yourself to someone else, you know. But I really begin to notice how when presented with the opportunity to share what I know in the ways that I was trained and educated, because I also have my master's in mental clinical health, that my confidence level would dramatically plummet. And I began experiencing symptoms of fear, and they would manifest itself predominantly in my stomach area and throat. You know, and these realized were affecting or had affected me on another level energetically, to where my chakras were either imbalanced or closed, you know, because of that trauma or whatever else I had inherited. So, you know, I would have memories creep up within my head surrounding mistakes that I'd made in the past, or thoughts concerning me not being good enough. And as I said earlier, comparing myself to others became present. And I just remember an incident where I had an idea that I wanted to create from, and just began doing my research. Like always, I came across an article, and I just, you know, I realized that, okay, well, you know, this person or whatever, it's already been done. And I began, like, in my head, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I really kind of like reflect back on these thoughts that are going to my head, like, well, I can't do it better than them, and blah blah blah. And I just stomped my fist down really hard and became emotional, because, you know, someone had already did it. And so I immediately convinced myself that I couldn't do it. And so these are just some of the ways that it impacted me. And I've been working diligently, I would say, now for probably the past 3 years, and just bringing myself up out of that. And so not afraid of who I am, because that's also something that was generation that was you know, through my ancestors because of my spiritual gifts. My family is heavily religious. You went to church, it seemed like, in my head as a kid every day, but I recognized that my mom had gifts. You know, they would have visions. My grandmother had visions. And recently, because I'm a mentor to my niece, I really realized how much of a spiritual insight she has at such a young age. And I say young because she's like in her mid-20s, and she speaks with such wisdom, and she wants to break that cycle of not being able to live in her true authenticity. And I see her will and determination, and that just makes me so happy. So thank you for allowing me to speak on how it has impacted my leadership abilities.
Man, Ananda, you were dropping so many gems during that. And I just appreciate it, because when looking at imposter syndrome, which is something that I specialize and coach around, I had to look at why is that something I specialize and coach around. And it's because it's something that I deal with on a daily basis. I'm always pushing myself with perfection. There's a reason this is called passion over perfection. I'm always pushing myself to be perfect. As soon as I accomplish something, I don't take time to celebrate that accomplishment, right? I'm just on to the next thing, which has caused me to have a huge gap in fulfillment in life. And it's getting better, right? I'm actively working on it. I'm actively conscious about it. And I can totally relate to you in regards to how imposter syndrome, it can really be a maniacal tool that we use against ourselves. And a lot of times it's we think of, okay, it's just myself, but really it can be generational. I totally agree with you that on that 100%. And it can be conditional. Maybe it's not generational, but it's just by happenstance of where you ended up growing up and living and the people you're around. So I so appreciate you sharing. Is that idea of being afraid of your spiritual gifts. I did not know that about you. And I so relate to that as well, because I have always, my family's very intuitive. I come from a family that is full of empaths. My youngest brother is very, very empathic. My mom's empathic. I knew what that meant, but because of, you know, would anybody else like to jump?
Yeah, I just like you were saying, Sydney D, that was so much information and I loved all of it. And I feel like I really connected to the generational pass on of imposter syndrome, because I had my own experience with that the last year or two, just recognizing that in my parents and how it limited me growing up as well. And how you have to just like actually recognize that in order to overcome it. And then the other thing, Sydney, you just mentioned something about basically just like reading people's energy, and like if you get kind of a weird feeling, being like, I don't want to mess with them. And the thing that popped in my head was, I'm also a Christian, and so the thing that popped in my head was like, you probably have the gift of discernment, is what that said to me. Like, you are able to discern, like, this person has good intentions, this person has bad intentions. And I love that, because I feel like that's so valuable to have that. I'm sure it's saved you from getting in a lot of weird situations in the past. So like, I'm a little jealous of that. So that's what popped in my head for that.
Hi, I'm Halston. And I just want to say, this is a great room. I really feel like imposter syndrome, like I resonate with that so much. And I'm the kind of person that I put stuff off and I try to tell myself like it doesn't exist until I have the mental capacity to deal with it. And so that always gets worse, you know, when I'm in isolation or I block other people out. So when you're around the right people, I feel like it does not happen as often. Jessica has been an amazing mentor lately. Love you, Jessica. And she's really helped me just bounce ideas off of her. So being able to do that has really let me get my creative juices flowing again and not feel so stuck. So definitely an amazing community, surrounding yourself with that helps to eliminate imposter syndrome, I feel like. I'm done speaking.
Thank you so much, Halston. I am so excited to catch up with you on what we were talking about this week too, but I definitely resonate with what you said as well.
And I appreciate you too, Halston, as well. I'm so happy that you were here. And I totally agree with you. That whole idea of finding your community, a space where you feel comfortable to share, talk about generational, how you're feeling. Because the one thing that I've noticed when I work with people who have imposter syndrome is there's such a cloud of shame. You curses, essentially. It's locked down in some of our DNA. So I so appreciate you bringing that up. That community's big. Anyone else like to share about imposter syndrome?
Hi.
Hey, Rebecca. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. It's good to see you again.
You too. I'm so mad that I just got to jump in. I just got off work and I was like, oh, I hope I make it on time. And I got stuck in traffic, but I'm so glad that I got to be here for the next half. You know, I think for imposter syndrome, what I've found so often in the work that I do, and especially the food and beverage industry, is that imposter syndrome kind of shows up as ego quite a bit. And I find that there's a lot of leaders who are leading with ego, but really when you break it down and you get down to the nitty gritty and you get down to what is causing that, right? Why is it that they feel like they have to be so right about everything? It often a very scared, insecure individual underneath it all, showing up in a highly egotistical, and I say ego in a negative way. Ego can have a positive, but I'm talking about it in the negative way. That's kind of what I've seen so often. And it's not something that we talk about in the food and beverage industry very often. It's mostly like, all right, we have to learn how to leave our ego at the door. But really what I think needs to be talked about is, why are we feeling so insecure? Why is it that we're not embracing our ability to be able to learn and to grow and stop looking at it as a weakness instead of a sign of strength?
When is there that line crossed between confidence and cockiness, right? When we're talking about ego. Because I think with someone who has imposter syndrome, that is like the hardest thing to balance. And Rebecca, I'm so happy you brought that up. What do you all think? When does it move between being confident and being cocky?
For myself and with this, because, you know, sometimes I think it's managing the energy, being able to kind of like, first of all, know yourself, being able to deal with your energetic signature or your personality in regards to like, okay, so what is the root cause of that? Because our ego, yes, while it's there to, you know, quote unquote, protect us, it can sometimes, you know, just become overbearing. And so we step out of alignment in regards to whatever their insecurities we may be trying to cover up, so to speak. And so just the only way that I can describe it is, because I deal with energy, you know, I began to kind of like just feel like maybe some type of anxiety, I guess, for me, or like, you know, trying to feel like, well, I already know this. You know, I'm a big believer in always being the student. You know, there's something that I can learn from everyone. But that being said, for myself, I think that's how I kind of like, you know, recognize that boundary, you know, when I begin to feel that anxiety or feel like I have to, quote unquote, prove myself.
I think you're so 100% right on. And the first thing that came to my mind when Sydney, when you asked that question was, I think it all stems from the ability to ask for help or acknowledge that you don't know everything. So we're 100% in agreement there. It all comes down to kind of being humble, I think, admitting vulnerability. I'm trying. I couldn't get that word out. Know that that person, you know, you yourself are following that guideline, right? Then you know that it's just a sign of confidence instead of a sign of cockiness, right? Which takes a lot of fear out of when you know it's just confidence and it's coming from such a pure place of just, I just know what the hell it is that I'm talking about, right? I know what I'm doing here. Then it's really easy to kind of wrap your mind around it. When you know if it's that person or yourself that and you're wondering, you're questioning whether or not that they're secure enough within themselves to ask for help or admit when they don't know it, that's the sign of cockiness. And I think it's pretty easy to read a lot of the times.
Something that came up for me, hearing that question, that was such a good question. It's one of those questions I was like, I actually want to just sit back and think about that for a minute. And I think what came up for me was when I'm noticing myself or someone else in a place of confidence, I feel like we tend to want to give more. For example, like if I'm feeling really confident in my balayage skills, for example, my natural reaction is that I want to help others find out those same techniques and teach them those techniques and give that information away to others. When I'm in a place of finding myself in like a cocky place, it's because I want the recognition, I want the praise, and I want the validation. So that's kind of what came up for me is like, I feel like that to me is kind of what defines those two is like, are you coming from a place of wanting to give to others? If that's the case, maybe you're feeling more confident. And if you're finding yourself wanting to take, or that you're in a place of a lot of need or lack of abundance, then you might find yourself in a cocky, position.
Gosh, Jessica, I so love that you just said that about what are your intentions behind what you're saying. That's the way I interpreted that, because I've been doing a lot of self-work and reading a lot of literature on, you know, just tools of prayer and meditation and law of attraction. And that's one of the things, even in books, like I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And something that it keeps coming up over and over and over again is to do things with a heart of giving. And the fact that you just said that, I was like, ooh, it's a sign. Because really, that's something, especially I know for me personally, when I get frustrated and I feel like, well, why isn't life working out? You know, what's going on? Maybe, well, where are the clients? You know, sometimes things are slow. When I get frustrated, it doesn't do anything for me. But when I start doing things from just sincerity of my heart and just to want to educate others, just to want to support my community, that's when magical things start to happen. That's when blessings start to happen. So I'm so happy that you brought up that intentionality behind confidence versus cockiness. That's so cool. Hello there. So it is time for a short break, and I want to share some awesome information with you from our support and sponsors. Hey there, hope you're enjoying today's episode. I wanted to make sure that I shared with you that I have a free, yes, free tool that can really up-level your life. It's called the Emotional Declutter Checklist, and it's literally a tool for you to use in times of overwhelm and times when you really want to get back to basics of self-care. So make sure to check the show notes and to gain access to your free emotional declutter checklist. So Jessica, I'm going to bounce right back to you. And if you could just tell us, as a leader, How have you had difficult conversations? I know last week Rebecca touched on this a little bit, actually, but I would love to hear another voice as to how you handle difficult conversations.
Yes, I love this question. I think it would have scared me answering this before, like maybe 5 years ago, if you'd asked me this, I would have been really intimidated about it because I've never seen myself as somebody who's great with confrontation and upholding boundaries and setting them even. But going back to when I was teaching, and actually, Sydney, you might even know about this already, but we had to use what's called a coaching form. So let's say a student came in and they, I'm trying to think of a specific example that's happened. They show up drunk to school. And as their educator, we would have to address the situation in a very specific manner. So how we would do this is first we would start off by acknowledging something that they actually did well. And it would be something specific. So let's say they showed up and they had all of their homework done and it looked really beautiful and you could tell they put a lot of effort into that. So acknowledging that and having it be something really genuine and not just like, you know, oh, you looked nice today. It had to be something really specific. So that was step one. Step two is to address the actual issue. So in this case, I would say something along the lines of, I've noticed that you have seemed intoxicated today. This is unacceptable, obviously. And moving forward, then step three would be, here's what you need to do next. So here's what I expect of you. So that's kind of how I have approached a lot of tough conversations with guests, for example. Like if there's a guest that is habitually late, I'll just say, you know, I want to say thank you so much for pre-booking your appointment. That's so helpful knowing like when you're going to be here and everything. We are running a little bit late today, so that's going to cut into our appointment time in the future. Let me, you know, send me a text or something just to let me know so I know how to address the rest of my day. So establishing what they are doing well, then going into the actual coaching portion of here's what happened that went wrong and here's what I expect next time. So that's been like my blueprint for handling those difficult conversations. And sometimes I still don't want to have them. Like it never gets easier. It never gets less awkward. And you never feel less anxious about it, I feel like. But when you have the tools to run that conversation successfully and know you're going into it trying to seek a win-win solution, it ends up going a lot smoother. So I don't know if that helps anybody with handling difficult conversations, but that's just what's helped me in the past.
Thank you so much. Actually, I think that's amazing because there are many approaches, right? To being a leader and having to have a tough conversation. And I kind of have a similar formula that I learned when I was working as a manager for Embassy Suites. You know, all of those chains have you do training, and especially at the managerial level, it's about how can you, because they consider your team members like internal guests. So it's all about how can you correct someone while being stern, but also not damaging them, their spirit at the same time. I would definitely start off by saying what's been going really well, what mistake took place. What differs is something that I would do is ask them, well, what solutions can we come up with? Because I feel like it really empowers that person. And it might be different with you talking to a client, right, or a guest. But employee-wise, someone on my team, you know, I'd want to empower them to come up with their own solution to how to prevent this from happening in the future. And then we would come to an agreement of, okay, so, you know, X solution that you came up with or we both came up with together, you know, I'm totally cool with that. So, you know, moving forward, keep in mind, this is what you decided. You know, and just kind of empowering them around their own correcting their own mistake moving forward. And if anybody else would like to jump in, feel free. Jessica, go ahead. I saw you on mute.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was just going to say that's really great advice. And that reminds me of I think it's Franklin Covey. Part of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People is like, that was kind of a big part of what our coachings were based off of, was one of the 7 habits is seek first to understand before being understood. And that was a big portion of those like coaching meetings, was just getting their perspective. Cause sometimes, you know, let's say that student, going back to like this hypothetical drunk student, you know, something happened really big in their life where they were drowning their sorrows the night before. And we don't know that. Like, you never know somebody's story until you just give them an opportunity to explain that. So I love that you brought that up, because I totally forgot about that part of it. So I love that.
Yeah, most definitely. And I appreciate you saying that too, and just rephrasing it with giving grace to folks. I do a lot of work also around work-life balance. I actually have a workshop coming up for it, for folks, for women. And that's one of the biggest things, is that society in the U.S. at least, I don't know about other countries, but have really pushed the idea of like, leave your shit at the door as soon as you get to work. And okay, there is a certain level of professionalism that needs to be held in a workspace. I'm not saying that's not true. However, we are human beings. We are not robots, right? We have good days. We have bad days. We have traumas, and, you know, we have triggers. And so just knowing that whoever you're speaking to is another human, and having that patience and grace with them, is so important to being I would call it servant leadership. It's a whole leadership model. So to being a servant leader, and it really does gain a lot of respect. That's not saying you have to be weak or anything and let people walk all over you, but that's just saying to understand that people all have their own situations going, you know? That person could have been drunk, or someone could be showing up habitually late because their car completely stopped working and now they're on the bus to get to work and they're taking a 3-hour bus ride. And so they seem a little lethargic at work and they're showing up late. And you might have jumped to a conclusion like, oh, is this person on drugs or are they drunk? And it could totally be, no, they literally got 2 hours of sleep, because by the time they help their kids and go to bed and wake up for work, they're on a 3-hour bus ride. You know, like, there's all these things that happen in the background. So Jessica, I'm so happy you called that out. Anybody else like to add to the difficult conversation piece? Go ahead, Esther.
Oh, thank you, Sydney. I just wanted to say I'm so happy I could find this circle. I'm very thankful, yes. And I really resonated when you said servant leadership for a few reasons. And I think it's so important and something that more than ever is needed in services. I know growing up, I was in the auxiliary of the Air Force, and that motto was really stuck in our head. If you were a commander or an officer, you would eat last. You would be at the last person in your flight. You would always be that person that was making sure everyone else before you got fed, got taken care of. You'd be the last person to go to sleep. And that kind of motto, it's just so important, because when it comes to a business and when you're running a business and you have clients, and with the example that you were sharing, Sydney, that also resonated so much about, you don't really know where that other person is at. You can assume that like, oh, they're doing this because they're lazy. But really, when you are the leader, you should be seeing how you can serve them. And when you have those clients, it's the same thing. And absolutely, it's like, how can I serve them? It's not how can I lead them and, you know, show them the way, but it's like, what do they need help with? How can I be the last person to eat? Because they can give me the money, but unless I'm actually serving them, I'm not going to see that kind of return that I want to see back. So I just thought that was such a beautiful point, and that servant leadership is absolutely something that I think any entrepreneur that's coaching and dealing with people needs to really instill more of, especially as people, it's all about how that experience is for that person and how much they feel like they're taken care of. But yeah, that was such an awesome point, and I'm done speaking now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Esther. I appreciate that. I do not have a background in military, so I had no idea that's how it was set up. And that's really cool to hear, just how that type of leadership style is instilled into making the team work. So thank you so much for sharing that. I learned something new today.
Absolutely. Thank you for letting me speak. I'm super happy that Amanda invited me and I saw it on your Instagram stories. Much love.
So Dee, I have one last question for you. Just sharing some of the new challenges you experienced when you stepped into your leadership role in general.
So first of all, just to realize that this is work that's not something that I do one day and think that I'm going to, you know, become, quote unquote, all of a sudden cured of imposter syndrome in regards to my leadership role, because, I mean, it takes work. Stepping into this role required me to do a lot of soul searching, and it doesn't stop. And the more I do it, I realize the more rewarding it is, and the more that, you know, I'm at peace with myself, and it requires me to challenge myself, hone in on my skills, improving my communication, showing up in ways that inspired me to grow more and become more open to more possibilities. Also to give myself grace, knowing that, you know, just because I make a mistake, it doesn't mean that, you know, my life is over, or I'm just, you know what I'm saying? It's just like that perfectionism kicks in, but, you know, just breathe and know that I'm human. I'm not, like you said earlier, I think it was you, Sydney, that you're not, I'm not not a robot, you know? I'm allowed to make mistakes, and I'm allowed to also take responsibility when I've made a mistake and to redirect myself as, you know, I'm aligned to do so. And so I found also that the challenges that I experienced, I believe integrating aspects of being a leader in a society that has followed a blueprint that has left out spirituality regardless of our belief systems. And I hope I'm making sense with this, because it popped in my head last night. And
you're making it clear as day sense.
Okay. So, I mean, because, like, the norm really is to follow societal examples, right? So when I say spirituality, what I'm referring to is leading through your higher self, leading us from a moral compass framework. And so when you do this, you automatically, you know, becoming more aware of that and knowing that that sense of having a sense of connecting to something bigger than myself, such as community. And one thing I can say that I'm grateful for, the way that the state of the world is now and the situation that we find ourselves, is that it has shown me that it has finally come to a point to where we as a people are becoming aware that connection is important. Not all spirituality is religious, but all religions espouse a distinctive spirituality. And so this is what I would like to be remembered by those who are in attendance here tonight. And as I connect with others, I just know that I wish to discover their authentic being. And alongside this, I embrace their differences. And I'm aware that there are opportunities to discover the similarities between all of us. You know, just because we're different does not mean that we don't share similarities. Like, you know, you're saying that we have to remember that if we can have a bad day, someone else has a bad day. So as a leader, how can I first, you know, look at myself and to, like, if I had a bad day, how would I want someone to approach me, you know? And so I always keep that into consideration. And so just honoring everyone's traditions, their beliefs, and their experiences, regardless if they're different from mine or not, it does not give me, you know, the right to kind of like, you know, turn my nose up at it or turn away from it, because I can learn something and something that is unknown to me. So this I do in hopes that we as human beings, as citizens of the earth, can collaborate in creating to inspire and uplift. And so the work that I find myself doing is seeing fragments of myself and others. So if I'm aware that we are in essence connected, how can I connect in an organic way with others? How can this be accomplished? And I ask myself these questions, and, you know, situations where it may be challenging for me at some time, because I'm not saying that every day is going to be rainbows and sunshine and glitter sprinkles all over it, you know? And I also want to add in that this is the age of Aquarius. And so with all the new technology coming in, that is no doubt an advancement that we can benefit from in our day-to-day lives. How can we connect in a way that allows one's spirit, aka spirituality, to remain interwoven into that connection, which is sometimes, you know, not able to happen in physical form, but, you know, how can we maintain that humanness, that spiritual, that higher self, ourself, you know, in the mix? And so I say this, and I thank you guys for listening.
Ooh, you dropped some knowledge.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Before we end tonight's session, would anybody like to share their closing thoughts just from, you know, what they experienced this evening? Any takeaways?
Dee, something you just said reminded me so much of something. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Russell Brand, but I heard him say something not too long ago about just this kind of hypothesis of what if we are all just like collectively reflections of God or a higher power, and like basically every one of us is like a component of one whole being. And that just like resonated me so much when you were talking, because I was like, it just like clicked in my head, like, yes, definitely, yes, yes, yes. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. And yes, 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 I resonate with that so much. And, you know, I could go on, but yes, that's how, you know, I like to look at it as well.
Absolutely. I just wanted to say that, yes, like we're all a reflection. And my last thought of tying this back into servant leadership is when you are serving others, they want to serve you because they want to reflect that back at you. So it's just wonderful to see how that reflection goes of whatever you are sharing with others is coming back at you.
Esther, I love that. I call that reciprocity. That's the like layman's term that I put to it. But I love how it's all been interwoven and interconnected. There's almost this inert need for when you give unto others, you provide for others that they, you know, want to give back to you. And I've never thought of it of being a spiritual connection, but I could totally see that. So I've just learned so much this evening and have so much to think about. Well, with that being said, I am just so appreciative to each and every single one of you that are in this room currently, and the folks that came in and out throughout the evening. You know, just the energy. A lot of folks I speak to, I do a lot of online events, and people are like, oh, I'm so sick and tired of Zoom, right? And Zoom fatigue. But really, it has a lot to do with the energy of the folks in the space that you're holding. And you can tell a difference between being in a meeting with, you know, folks that are miserable versus being in a meeting with folks who are excited, happy to be there. There is a difference. So I can really feel the difference with you all. I really enjoy our conversation, whether it ended up being just three of us or 50 of us. You know, the power that is being spoken, I appreciate it. And it all comes back to empowering women who are leaders, who want to be leaders, who don't maybe see themselves as leaders yet. And they really are. So thank you so much. Feel free to, like I said, like everybody on here. Make sure to follow Jessica and Ananda. They both are amazing women. And then as well, feel free to check out my workshop. If you go to my my Instagram and to my link on my Instagram website, it's the first thing that pops up. It's called Balancing Act, and we're going to talk about work-life balance here in the next few weeks. So I so appreciate you all, and I hope you all have a wonderful day. I'm going to be like Bob Barker at the end and tell everybody, take care of yourselves. He used to say, spay and neuter your pets. Take care of yourselves. I love this last week. It came up about health. If you need to go to the doctor, you know, hopefully you can, but if you need a physical, if you need to see a dentist, if you need to get your eyes checked, your ears, whatever, you know, if you have a sleep disorder, if you're not sleeping well and you need a CPAP machine, please take care of your health. You know, as leaders, we tend to want to pour onto others, but we don't fill up our own cups. And so it's just so important that we keep our own health in check. And with that being said, good night and blessings.